360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
We are just waiting for Kezia Puric, the member for Goyder, to arrive, but joining us in the studio this morning for The Week That Was, it is proudly brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers, and now also broadcasting on 8HA in Alice Springs from midday. We've got the opposition leader, Leah Finocchiaro. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And we've got the Minister for Territory Families and also Urban Housing and Sport as well, Kate Warden.
And multicultural and disabilities.
And yeah, lots of them. Good morning to you.
Morning, Katie.
Now, great to have you both in the studio. As I said, we are expecting Kezia Puric to be here very shortly. But I might start off this morning. We do know that the situation in Victoria with that declaration of the whole state being declared a hotspot a couple of days ago, it has had a big impact. There's no doubt about it. I guess, you know, the whole state of Victoria realistically has had a terrible time. This is the fourth time, I believe, that they've gone into lockdown. And then we know that that there have been quite a number of Territorians caught up in obviously trying to get back to the territory. Last week we spoke quite extensively about that. But today that discussion is sort of turning towards the impact that it's going to have on business as well, and the impact that it can potentially have on accommodation that's already been booked in terms of those travelling to the Fink and travelling to different events that are happening around the territory. You know, there's no doubt that any lockdown does have a big big impact on everyone.
It really does, Katie. And what's most interesting, I think, is the way in which the Gunner government all of a sudden are changing how they deal with our COVID response. Of course, up until this lockdown, you know, we've had very clear messaging from the Gunner government around needing police on borders to check entry, about OSMAT running the international quarantine out at Howard Springs. And now all of a sudden we've got a situation where the Chief Minister and the Police Commissioner are saying, nope, we don't need anyone on our borders. We don't need to do rapid antigen testing of staff out at Howard Springs. We don't need to have the same PPE that OSMAT used to use. And we don't even need to now bring in international arrivals at the RAF base. We'll bring them in through the airport. So lots of change on this one at a time when people are very comfortable in the way we've been managing COVID to date. And, you know, we're heralded as the gold standard. Well, why are we changing the gold standard?
Well, look, I will talk more broadly, firstly, about the situation when it comes to those borders and the road, the way in which they're managed on the road. We'll go to the situation out at the Darwin International Airport in just a little while. But with those border checkpoints, Leah, I know that you've been quite vocal saying that the government needs to immediately mobilise specialist health personnel on our road border checkpoints to ensure that the territory is not left exposed. We caught up with John Patterson from AMSANT yesterday, who is also concerned about our road borders. But Kate, I did also catch up with the Northern Territory Police earlier in the week, and they have got that number plate recognition on those borders. They are doing some other things to check people as they come across the border. I mean, I question whether it is the best use of our resources to have police on the borders.
Well, the thing is, Katie, I think that we can sit around here and we could have a conversation for an hour about COVID. We're not experts. And so I think what we have to say is through the entirety of the pandemic, the Northern Territory has quite rightly relied on the advice of experts. So they're not taking this lightly. They don't, you know, sort of get all casual and say, oh, let's not bother about road borders. I think the thing is, the fact is that we don't actually have a hard border with Victoria. So if somebody from Victoria, you have to step it through, is in a car and decides to try and get to the Northern Territory, they're either going to come through Queensland or they're going to come through South Australia. Those guys have got hard borders and they're checking vehicles that come in. So you have to have some reliance. This is, you know, the response to coronavirus is a national response. You know, there's a couple of things that Leah's now raised around coming in through the airport. Well, those are decisions at the moment. The airports are run by the federal government. So you can't sort of just keep muddying the waters around corona. You think to have to separate these things out. So if we're talking about number plate recognition, yes, we've got that. But we also have hard borders. We've got hard borders from South Australia to Victoria to Queensland through to New South Wales and Victoria. And so you've got to say, okay, those guys have got that in place. That's important. And we can do this at the moment. They step it out. But those decisions are always being reviewed. We've got experts doing that. And as much as we can speculate, and I hear so much speculation, it gets to the point of very frustrating to hear all this speculation, armchair experts about everything to do with coronavirus. I think the fact is the Territory's relied on expert advice right from the start and will continue to do that.
I guess reviewing decisions. When you look at people like John Patterson, obviously representing the likes of Aboriginal Aboriginal, you know, communities around the Northern Territory. You know, we can all be called armchair experts, but they're also people that are representing, you know, the people that they are employed to represent. And
correct.
They're actually, they've got concerns that that do need to be answered. And I think at the end of the day, you know, there's one thing saying that people are armchair experts, but it's a total other people questioning some of those decisions to make sure that the right thing is happening for
so
the Territory.
John Paterson is a very, very revered and appreciated stakeholder in this space. He's been consistent from the start around the advocacy for particularly very vulnerable Indigenous people, and that's his role, and I've always appreciated the role that he's had. John Paterson has been saying these things from the start, and our government has worked with him closely to recognise those needs. So a lot of the responses you saw very early, closure of borders, quick closure of borders, those sorts of things are in response to people like his advocacy, because he does know, you know, that area. And it's right that he should raise his voice and concerns, and we'll continue to talk to people, really important stakeholders
like John. With those road borders, do you reckon, though, I mean, I do take the point on that the opposition has made, where it doesn't necessarily need to be police that are on those road borders. Is it a situation where we could maybe be standing up some other you know, health professionals or somebody else at those border checkpoints, just to make sure that we don't have anybody come across?
If that's the advice of the experts, and we'll do that. I think I've heard the accusation about penny pinching. That's not what it's about. We've got people that have been doing this work for a long time now. I mean, it's over a year, Katie, we've been
doing this. You know, Katie, if you want to let anyone else speak this morning, that'd be great. But, you know, you've been doing this for over a year and you've been doing it completely differently. And I think that's why people are so concerned. You've put yourself out as a government, you know, you're a one trick pony. The only thing you know how to do is manage COVID. So thankfully you've gotten that right.
And all you do is whinge about everything.
Okay, it's my turn to talk now, Kate. Thanks a lot. So, you know, now all of a sudden you're changing the rules of the game. You're talking about relying on the experts. Well, last time I checked, the police commissioner wasn't a health expert. And, of course, what you're failing to understand is that it's actually Territory Health, public health officials standing in our airports, not the federal government standing in our airports. What? So you're wrong there. And ultimately, we have people travelling right around this nation in vehicles. It's a 14-day quarantine period. So if a Victorian crossed the border into South Australia 9 days ago and then decides to pop into the NT, who is vetting or stopping or even just letting that person know, hi, where have you come from? Oh, you're Victorian. Look, we've got a rule in the Territory where you have to go to quarantine. Do you mind making your way straight to Mercure and Alice Springs and doing your 14 days or turn around and go back? That's all we're saying. You know, there's no need to have police on our borders. They are under the pump with crime as it is. But if you can have public health officials en masse vetting Territorians travelling intrastate, let's not forget intrastate, why can't you have them on the borders?
I do just want to let everybody know that we have got Kezia Purick in the studio with us now.
Welcome.
As well. Now, Kezia, we've been talking about these road
Morning,
borders.
Everyone.
Great to have you in here. Talking about the road borders and whether we do need to have officials on those borders. I know that there's been a lot of discussion about it and some wondering if we do indeed need to go down this path.
Well, I know from last time that, yes, there were police on our hard borders, as some Kate refers them to, like straight into other states.
Yep.
But people still got through, meaning that my sister came from Queensland and into the NT and said, you'll have to go to Alice Springs. Or if you want to quarantine in Darwin, go up north. So she and my niece went up north and they came across Borroloola way and there was no one on the border.
Oh, that's
right.
They
just moseyed right on in. And I'm sure other people moseyed right on in. So it's not foolproof. There are other ways you can get in and out of the territory as well as you can other states. And a lot of adventures do that. I think it is concerning to people that there's no checking at our hard borders, whether it's a police person or whether it's some kind of other clinician or an official or military, I don't know. But I just know because I've had people visiting me and they are seriously travelling from all around the country into
the
Northern Territory. Now, forget the WA people because I've just come straight from WA. But I've got some mates staying with me from Tasmania and they've come up the eastern seaboard mm-hmm. and in their caravan and they've only arrived in the last week or so. So there is some genuine concerns out there in the community. Mm. The number of people who are flooding in vans and camper vans and those kind of
vehicles. Oh, it's incredible.
So there is concern in the community. And with the changes at Howard Springs and...
Well, I want to talk about those changes as well because...
There's a bit of unrest in the community and I've had a few employee kind of people who work there and they seem to have some genuine concerns.
Yes.
I know the Nurses Federation has genuine concerns in regards to
the testing changes.
Nursing people going home, which... I didn't know used to stay there for their shift, like a bit like a FIFO worker. Mm-hmm. So there are some genuine concerns out there in the community
in regards to transmission. There's big clinical changes out at Howard Springs. And Kate, I mean, it's just so arrogant for you to call people armchair bandits or whatever you called them, because these are concerned Territorians. And don't forget, it's your government who shoved this down the throats of Territorians for a year about how things should be done. And now you're changing it and you're wondering why everyone's confused and concerned. Well, you've done that to people. You've indoctrinated people to how things should go, and now you're flipping it around and trying to expect people to just come on this journey with you, like we can blindly follow you like sheep. That's just not how life works. And I think it's really dismissive and disrespectful to fob people's concerns off. Things are changing, and changing quickly and right across the board, whether it's Howard Springs, international flights or borders. We're seeing a massive departure in how we used to do things, and you guys just aren't explaining why.
Well, I think it's really disingenuous. Every single time I've been in here, in fact, I'm reminded that just over 12 months ago, I sat where you are and you were sitting where I was, and you said you would open the borders on the 22nd of June last year.
Oh, my gosh, are you
serious?
I know
you don't like to be reminded of that, but if you want to go political, that's exactly where we're going,
no,
Leah.
No, I'm not going political.
You know,
I'm talking about what Territorians care
year,
about.
You would have opened the borders and we would have had the virus here.
Look, of course,
you constantly do this into the community. You actually ruffle people's feathers and make people feel unsafe.
Well, I do
what
think
I'm saying is that we make the best decisions we can on a daily basis. It's constantly reviewed. We listen to the advice of experts. That's what we've been doing all the way through. But if you just keep, you know, I think you think if you pull a thread and it might unravel somewhere, or you throw a bomb in here, Leah, this is your tactic and everybody knows it. So please, if you want to get on board, ask some legitimate questions.
But Kate,
don't do it by just putting out there.
Right. You are so out of touch. You are so out of touch. You are so out of touch. Seriously.
Let's hear from
Kezia.
I know that many people, well, out the rural area anyway, and they're pretty practical sort of people, is that if there is one community transmission in the Territory or Darwin, let's say the top end for now, then people are just going to go to ground. They're going to shut their businesses. Mm. They're going to shut their homes. And I will shut my electoral office if there's one community transmission, because one of my staff, the electoral officer assistant, is getting treatment for cancer and has done for many years. She's vulnerable. The other one might be not as young as we'd like everyone us to be. But people will just, I don't know if they'll panic, but they will go ballistic. And how it ever gets out, and I sincerely hope and pray that it doesn't get out, but I would like to know any risk assessment activities or programs that the government did in regards to changing the systems at Howard Springs, because it's when you do those risk assessments, you identify the risks, and then you put measures in to either mitigate them or eliminate those risks.
Yeah.
Now, that's the information. And we don't want the people don't need the nitty-gritty. They just need to know it's done, and they need to be given the information.
And I think at the,
how it's been done.
And look, at the end of the day, you know, I'm not in here making up concerns that, you know, that I've thought of overnight, where I think, all right, I'm going to run this story. It's from our listeners, but it's also hearing from people like the Nursing Federation. It's also hearing from the likes of AMSANT, and it's speaking to other groups who have got genuine concerns. But I do want to take you across to listen to something that that the Health Minister Natasha Files revealed on the show a little bit earlier in the week about these changes to the way in which the repatriation flights will be coming into the Northern Territory down the track. Take a listen. All right, another listener question asking if those passengers are now being transferred through the international airport instead of the RAAF base.
My understanding, Katie, is that they are still going through the RAF side of Darwin International Airport. There are plans that at some point they will come across, but we have not transferred that yet. There needs to be a number of changes made.
Why?
The RAF side has been suitable, but we believe that in terms of having this as a longer term plan, there's changes that we could make that would be even safer. And utilising the international arrivals part but keeping people separate is the way that we should go. But those changes haven't been made. There needs to be some rectifications made before that would happen.
When are you expecting those changes?
So we won't do it until it's safe. It needs to be checked off. We had the chief nurse, Alison McMillan, up here last week auditing our quarantine program once again. So it would be fully audited and making sure that safety for Territorians comes first.
But hang on, my understanding is that the RAF area where those passengers passengers are currently going through is entirely separate to the airport, whereas if they were coming through the international side of things, that would mean that they're actually going through the same airport as the rest of us. And in some cases, we're talking about people who are highly infectious.
So we need to make sure that they come through entirely separate through that side. So that is the work that would be undertaken.
So that was the Health Minister, Natasha Files, on the show a little bit earlier in the week, making that revelation, which I've got to say surprised a lot of Territorians and concerned a lot of people. Now, we do know, and the International Airport has obviously provided information saying that there would need to be major infrastructure changes. There would also need to be changes.
Which presumably the Commonwealth will be paying.
Well, I would
hope so. The airport belongs to the Commonwealth. Yeah. So all these decisions at the moment are with the Commonwealth.
No, our airport is a RAF base. That's the first thing. The actual NT airports, or whatever it's called these days, they own the infrastructure and they run the business of running the airport.
Correct.
They are not going to pay for this. The Commonwealth have to pay for these modifications.
Well, nor should they have to. I mean, like, if it's a change that's coming into play, they shouldn't have to.
Yes, quarantine and immigrations is a Commonwealth responsibility.
Absolutely.
So I don't want... If I was an investor in that airport business, I wouldn't want my investment to be going to pay for something that the Commonwealth government should be paying for.
Those are discussions that the Commonwealth needs to have with the airport, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. That's not the discussions that we... I mean, obviously, we would have a view on that. Yeah. And I think it obviously is working through the RAF base. But if that's what they're doing, you're absolutely right, Kate. It would take a huge amount of infrastructure. You'd want it to be completely separate.
Completely sterile.
You would want
the
procedures. Well, no, it's... At the moment, I think they're considering it. That doesn't mean it's happening.
Katie,
I think they're looking at it for a longer term and seeing what could occur.
But the Chief Minister said earlier in the week that he was hoping by the wet season.
Oh, good luck with that.
We're a while away from that.
But lucky with the Commonwealth.
Kate, you're making it sound like the NT government is at arm's length from this discussion and decision-making. I mean, I would have thought the Territory is right in there trying to yield the best outcome. I had the opportunity to actually go and see where those repatriation flights are coming in through the RAF base, and it's a completely separate building on the side of the RAF base, and people go straight out the gate.
Onto the bus.
Straight out. So it's a fantastic facility that's been tried and tested and worked to date, and again, no real explanation as to why any of those processes or systems have to change, why we have to make infrastructure upgrades at Darwin International to change how things are going. And it just feeds this concern throughout the community, and that's what people are telling us.
To look at things from the other perspective is that you do sort of wonder whether we've reached a point now where the RAF base need to actually utilise that facility themselves. And that's why the change is happening. It still concerns me. I still think to myself, I still feel worried about those flights then arriving and having to go through the airport terminal, unless it's entirely separate.
Minister Files said the transfer from the RAF side of operations to NT Airport side of operations will be safer. I disagree with that. Mm. I think if you're on the RAF side, you are very excluded from mainstream traffic.
From everything.
Given that the RAF controls that area, it would be very regimented. It's a military base on
that side.
So to say it's safer, I just don't believe that's correct.
I think we're being a bit preemptive in our discussions. I think it's good that we're having the discussion, but I think we're being a bit preemptive. I think clearly, Katie, you made a good point that the RAF possibly want their facilities at some point down the line. I also know that numbers from overseas from our target areas at the moment are actually going down. There's less people coming back now. Those people who have either decided to stay in places like London have decided to stay on and not come back. So those numbers are coming progressively down. So maybe there is that discussion happening, but I think what we have to do is let them have those discussions. And I think if we think that they would just be allowed to wander through the same place that you and I, you would have to do it differently.
I was listening to the airport operations manager. Okay, they were still in a sort of a separate area, but a couple of people on a tram did get a bit lost.
We would keep it. I mean, that's the whole point, Kezia. These are decisions that would be made with lots of other people beyond us that would know those ins and outs and how that would work. You would think it would have to be a completely separate area and managed differently. And certainly we are not going to drop our standards for this sort of decision-making.
Well, I think we've got to be certain that we're not, because at the end of the day, in Victoria, that's where we've, that hotel transmission and some of the situations that they're going through at the moment. As we know and as we've heard, and the Chief Minister said this a lot during the election campaign, all it takes is one case.
And that's true. And that's
at the
end of the day. So we're really cognizant of that.
That's exactly
right. So you have to maintain those standards. I can assure your listeners that we would do absolutely everything, and we have been doing absolutely everything to make sure our community community is as safe as possible. And that will continue, whether it's making that decision around the airport, whether it's about making the decision about PPE. Those decisions are front and centre all the time and being made by experts.
But why aren't you explaining it to people? So, you know, we asked in Parliament a couple of weeks ago, why has there been changes to the mask that OSMAT used to wear?
Yep.
You know, the gold standard OSMAT, the highly skilled international professionals, to what NT Health are now doing. And I got this ridiculous, laughable answer from the Chief Minister that it was because people in NT Health have different shaped faces. I mean,
really?
What a ludicrous answer. I mean, did people in OSMAT not have different shaped faces? I mean, these can't seriously be the types of parcels of information you think you can just blob out and hope that Territorians swallow. I mean, it just doesn't pass any reasonable standard of communication during a pandemic.
360 is the week that was. Thanks to the Silver Hebron, your local lawyers.
You are listening to The Week That Was. Leah Finocchiaro, Kate Warden and Kezia Purick in the studio with me this morning. Now, I do want to speak about this situation with the Quest Apartments at Berrima. We had the Health Minister, Natasha Files, on the show yesterday. As she wouldn't go into, or certainly wouldn't be drawn into detail about why the Health Department has booked the entire of the Quest Berrima. We have had a number of people get in contact with us quite concerned about that situation. We spoke to well-known Territorian Faye Miller yesterday, who had family coming here for a wedding. They had their bookings, and there was a number of rooms. They had those bookings cancelled. There is no doubt that this has had a real impact, but I think that people feel genuinely, you know, pretty upset that that their bookings have been cancelled. But they're also questioning why the health department needs the entire facility.
That's exactly right. And again, it comes down to communication. I mean, this is the government that was going to be open and transparent. Why has it taken, saga has been dragging on all week, where the government is still hush-hush about who is going into the Quest and why they've had to book out the whole facility, and why tourists and Territorians who booked that facility have just been kicked to the curb, their money refunded and left to fend for themselves to find new accommodation. I mean, it's a really appalling situation. And again, how top secret could this be? Unless it's something to do with Pine Gap, I'm pretty sure you can tell us who's going to be staying
now
at the Quest Apartments.
How many rooms are we talking about?
Oh, I'm not 100% sure, actually. We've put in a number of requests to the Quest. We have asked them. Ronnie, my producer, has been chasing them for 24 hours at least and asking various questions. We did get a very short and sharp statement from the Northern Territory Health Department, and I will find that in just a moment and read it out for everybody. Kate, what do you think?
I think what the situation is that over time, health make a lot of contractual agreements with their specialists. So if you're a specialist that comes in and out of the territory, they'll often find accommodation. I guess at the moment they require more accommodation, and they may have made, these agreements are all commercial agreements that they make. So these things, this is operational, Katie. I think that's really important to note that. So when we've got people coming to the Northern Territory for health work, let's say, or other work, it's not unusual for government to have contractual arrangements for accommodation. In this case, obviously, we've seen a situation where people have lost their accommodation, and that is not ideal. In terms of tourism,
would have been a bit more helpful.
Absolutely. So I think that if the Quest had made a decision to take a contract with the government, and they knew that they had bookings for that time, it's how they managed that, and that's really disappointing. That's disappointing as a Territorian that's occurred. And I think I said to you off air, Katie, I've got to an accommodation before and been told, no, your accommodation, we don't have your booking, and it's an awful time for people travelling. I mean, that situation where you're coming to a wedding, absolutely, it's not good.
I mean, the situation is at this point in time as well is you can't get another room. Like, this is the difficulty. But I'll just read you out the response that we received from the Northern Territory Health spokesperson yesterday. The Department of Health has a range of contracts in place for accommodation. Like other residential agreements, this is commercial in confidence, and we respect people's privacy and circumstances. Now, look, usually I would say I totally understand that. But we're talking about a whole hotel, and there are questions being asked about whether this is for staff out at Howard Springs. But fundamentally, we're talking about taxpayers' dollars.
That's right. I mean, Kate, take some responsibility. You want to throw Quest under the bus, and sure, maybe they haven't done the right thing. But ultimately, this is a Northern Territory Government contract to hire out an entire hotel for health staff of some description, and you guys want to pretend and fob it off as operational. It doesn't take much to ring your CEO of a department and say, hey, that operational decision you made, why did you do that? And then come out and tell Territorians about it.
It could be for the staff. Could be for the additional staff that are needed for Howard Springs.
And of course, that's the assumption that people are making. But we've also had people message us and ask, is it actually, surely we're not using it as like an overflow facility if Howard Springs is
no,
too busy.
No, we're not using it as an overflow facility.
And these are the kind of questions that people have got.
You know that much, but you don't know what it is being used for? You must know.
So when agreements are made between whatever two organisations, whether it's a private enterprise and government or it's government and governments, these agreements that are made are made in a confidential manner.
Yeah, the cost is confidential, not who it is.
So
Territorians don't want to know the list of names of people who are going to stay there or the price. They want to know why the Northern Territory government is spending taxpayers' dollars booking an entire hotel, kicking tourists out of that hotel, and then not telling Territorians who it is. Is it for Howard Springs?
Didn't literally kick people out, and I'm not throwing the Quest under the bus here, Leah. You have a really poor choice of language that's meant to be just inflammatory, but that's fine. We can all live with that. We know that that's your mode of operating.
All right.
What's true here is that there was a contract with the government and it hasn't been managed perhaps as well as we'd have liked it to have been in terms of people having accommodation. But you know, Katie, 12 months ago we were sitting here worried about our tourism operators.
100%.
And now we're in a different situation and we're still throwing bricks. We have to be very careful.
No, it's because we want to know who's staying there.
Can we have something really positive today? Oh, how good it is
that there's Territorians who are out on the street because the health department's booked the hotel.
Exactly.
Our tourism
has done so well that they're
no thanks to you.
That's
definitely
a really good thing.
I definitely agree that we should 100%, you know, the hospitality and tourism industry should be commended, and we're very happy that they're obviously, you know, that the majority of motels are full. But at the end of the day, right now we are talking about a situation where we've got Territorians and also interstate tourists who we are trying to make a good impression for, who've maybe never been to the Northern Territory before.
And we would like their money.
And we would like them to stay. We'd like them to come back. And when we're then cancelling their booking so that the health department can book out the whole hotel, but then we can't ask questions about why they've booked it out, or we can't have them answered. The thing that people are getting really frustrated with. I've got a message here from Alan. It says, hi, Katie. The health department taking over Quest comes at a cost to the taxpayer versus if bookings were honoured for tourists who'd confirmed bookings would be a win for the accommodation provider, plus a win for the government receiving the GST component. I think the health department's using the accommodation to house Howard Springs staff, which, according to the Northern Territory government, is not a money-making affair. There's reputational damage as the southern tourists who are now stuck as there's nothing else available. The government's buggered this on top of the other stuff. Terrible look for the Northern Territory, says Alan. Now, that's a genuine Territorian who sent us that message, who is really outlining, I think, the way that a lot of people would be feeling at the moment.
Kate, I don't know where you think I get my information from, but my job as the opposition leader is to be out there across the territory listening to Territorians and then putting their views to you. And that is where we get our information. And it is Territorians who are concerned about these very issues. These are their words I'm presenting to you, and you in your usual belligerent, arrogant way are dismissing that completely. Why can't the government tell us who is in there?
I agree. I don't understand what the secrecy is. Like, the Quest at Palmerston, the Quest at Berrima probably houses, it's probably got a couple hundred rooms or 100 rooms, all right?
Yeah.
So it's not only the elderly couple that you talked about that have been denied their accommodation. There have been a swag of people who have been booked in it. Because I know a lot of FIFO kind of workers use that accommodation because it's fresh, it's clean, and it's halfway to the airport.
I would have thought ahead of the supercars as well, that it would be probably a popular one.
Exactly. But so if the government is... through Department of Health is taking over this accommodation, what other accommodation might they be also looking to? Like, there's a Quest at Palmerston. And well, I think from my understanding,
it's operational that the health department make those bookings.
Well,
and
if
I think
it's operational,
that's what
there shouldn't be any secret about it.
But they make contractual agreements with other parties.
Yeah.
Kezia, the important thing is it's not just about government; it's actually about the Quest as well. Those agreements are done confidentially for a reason.
But what everybody is wondering at this point in time, the thing that we are wondering though at this point in time
is who's going in there.
That's right,
and
that's fundamentally what everybody's trying to get answered.
No one wants to know the money.
We're going to move along. We're going to take a very short break.
360 is the week that was. Thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. We have got Leah Finocchiaro, Kate Warden and Kezia Puric in the studio with us. I tell you what, there's a lot to cover off on this morning and I want to try to get through it all. I do just want to take you across to, unfortunately, a pretty terrible incident that has unfolded in Alice Springs. We know that the Northern Territory Police have arrested a 15-year-old male following an incident in Alice Springs earlier in the week. Now, on Tuesday evening, a 16-year-old female was allegedly assaulted by the 15-year-old male before he dragged her into a vehicle against her will and drove to another location where the female was able to flee to a nearby service station for assistance. We know that the senior constable Evans as well as police dog Freddie were deployed and leading members to the unit where occupants were seen slamming the doors shut and locking it. The alleged offender then tried to flee, but they were able to apprehend this youth, who's been arrested without incident and charged with aggravated assault and deprivation of liberty. Now, my understanding is that that person is due to appear in court. Unfortunately, you know, I know that that's out of Central Australia and we do broadcast to 8HA at midday today, as we all know. But then up here in the top end, we had another situation where a 15-year-old was arrested and ultimately is appearing in court yesterday, I understand, over a number of unlawful entries in Ludmilla. Unfortunately, though, also in Ludmilla, we saw a situation separately, as I understand it, where a young child was assaulted by a man not known to her. This is something that quite a few people have been in contact with us about in Ludmilla, given the fact that, you know, that there's plenty of families that live there and they're feeling pretty worried that they can't have their kids playing out in the yards as they usually would in a
safe
manner.
Absolutely. Horrific stuff, Katie. I mean, it's not just that. We've had, of course, the Zakoli IJ and other ram raids with the 15-year-old who was arrested for that crime spree. We've had a 13-year-old arrested over a serious assault in Palmerston, a 15-year-old arrested in Jingley. We've had a group of seven children aged around 10 years old who threw rocks at windows at a sporting facility in Alice Springs. The list goes on and on and on. And what I want to know...
It's getting worse.
It's getting worse.
The nature of the activity.
What I want to know is, were those youths bailed? Now, we walked into Parliament 3 or so weeks ago where the government heralded its toughest reform ever. We know that their changes to bail were absolutely weak at best. And I want to know, are these kids repeat offenders? Were they bailed? And were they bailed for a serious breach of bail? Because if they were, it means the youth justice reform we just did is absolutely not working, and that revolving door of bail continues to be something that plagues Territorians and, of course, our hardworking police.
Well, I think that one of those things is that we can concentrate on bail because that's just a short amount of time, and it is a privilege. And of course, we have changed the law around a whole raft of offences that the presumption of bail would not exist in. So those changes are in place. I think that it's always one crime. You know, it's just too many, and we're always having to make sure that we've got the right responses to that. In terms of these young people, I don't know the details around whether this one's on bail or this one's on that. What we have to have and know is that those kids are going into the system. I know that those numbers for us have risen in detention. I can say that as the minister responsible for youth detention. Our numbers have gradually over the last few weeks risen, and we're responding to that. So, but what's really important is to make sure around community safety, and all of the evidence says if you take a kid and lock them up immediately on their first offence. I'm not talking about where that offence is really serious, and the ones that you've articulated, Katie, are serious. They're serious offences, and you would anticipate that those young people would be in detention. The numbers that I've got, without going into individual cases, because of course those cases now need to go before the court, as you've rightly said, that those young people, you know, about what response they get according to whatever crime they've done, whether it is that they were on bail, those questions are around the individual, but it's about the system as well. So there's lots of levels working in this space. But no, I'm not going to get into a "you haven't locked everybody up."
Can I just ask though?
Yelling match today.
Am I able to ask how you said that those numbers in detention have gone up? How many are in detention now?
As of yesterday, I had about 43.
Yep.
Yeah. So
at Don Dale.
No, that's 43 across the Northern Territory. Okay. It's a lower number. Obviously, in Alice Springs, it's a smaller facility and obviously a smaller population. But around this time last year, those numbers were as low as 18. So there's a change there. There's 43 young people that we have to make sure that we do the right thing with them when they're in detention as well. So what's really important now is, yes, they're locked up. The community's safer through that. But all of the evidence says if you just keep locking those kids up, the community's actually in the longer term not safer because they come out and they reoffend.
I'm really interested in the KPIs.
While they're in our detention facilities, to make sure that they have a choice to walk another direction.
I mean, I'm really interested to know if the new legislation is working. Now, Kate, you're the Territory Families Minister. That makes you responsible for youth justice. Surely you, as the responsible minister, are monitoring whether or not your new bail laws are working. I mean, this was designed to stop, or it's supposed to stop youths who are repeat offenders who do those serious breaches of bail from getting bail. So I want to know what those numbers are like. Of the youth presenting in court for a bail application for serious breaches of bail, how many are getting bailed and how many are being remanded?
So as part of the reforms that we made a commitment, and it's something that my office is monitoring very tightly, to report, to get the stats together at a quarterly. So you need to have some evidence. You can't just say in a week has that worked, because, you know, we could have a spike in a week, and we've had that in the past where numbers have gone from 18 to 24 and back to 18
but
as those kids have gone
there
out.
There is going to be some quarterly reporting.
Katie, that was part of our reforms.
Yep.
Actually, quarterly, we'll get those statistics together so that we can see. So
will they be something that are public?
Yep. I'm happy to give those statistics to the public. But what's important is a longitudinal study. So what we've said is we really need 12 months of data to be able to compare to the 12 months before.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be, after 12 months, we will be doing that over. And so it'll essentially take an 18-month period to work out if that's working.
How convenient.
I'm interested to find out, though, what exactly you'll be looking at to see whether it is a success. Will it be based upon whether young people are repeat offending? Will it be based on whether, are we going to get a breakdown of how many of the crimes committed in the Northern Territory are being committed by youths? Are we sort of going to look at some of that data?
Yes, so we can look at that. We can also, we'll also be looking at tracking where those young, what are the outcomes for those young people.
Yep.
So I think it's around 70% of young people that offend the first time never go on to reoffend. A lot of that can be associated, because you can see the statistics around young men that play up around that 14, 15, 16 age group. Most young people do not go on to reoffend. It's about the ones that do reoffend and what is the, you know, what is the flow on from there,
most
and are our interventions working?
Don't reoffend. Most normal people don't reoffend. The sad reality is a lot of these young offenders are most likely affected by FASD. They don't have the powers of reasoning or consequences. But if they've committed a crime, well, sure, and they're found guilty in a court of law, they should do the time. But I'd be interested in finding out what rehabilitation do these young people get, because it's one thing to, and that goes for adults
as well.
So, Kezia,
let's get you out to the youth detention centre and we can show you what we're doing.
That's part of the problem, I think, in our society, is we chuck people in jail and then expect them to, expect them to rehabilitate themselves.
Mm-hmm. All the evidence says it doesn't work, Kezia.
I know that, and that's why I'm saying this. But they have got limited capacity, some of these people, so they're not going to fully comprehend probably even the rehabilitation work they've done. But that's our problem as society. But what I find and what I'm observing, and so are people in the community, and I've said this before in here, I think, is that the nature and the level of the seriousness of these crimes is accelerating. It's like, you know, they're taking weapons of choice, they're taking
I noticed that there's a new way of describing a knife, you know, a sharper edged instrument or whatever. And there's probably a reason for that, a logical reason. But they are arming themselves and they are committing more serious acts of aggression. Now,
violent crime is up. Yeah.
Violent crime.
Violent crime is up across the territory. Yeah.
And it's not just boys, you know. I mean, in the olden days, yes, it was men who seemed to be the perpetrators. But now there's a heavy mix of young women or young girls who are undertaking serious acts of aggression. And that's a big concern to me and the community.
We're going to, I just want to take a change of pace right now because, as I said, there has been so much unfold over the course of the week. And I want to talk about, who's going to be running from the Northern Territory for our federal seats in Parliament. We know that the race certainly
heated up a little bit. It's a lottery.
So the race heated up somewhat throughout the week.
Every child gets a prize.
And we know that Jacinta Price is going to be running for the Senate. She announced earlier in the week against National Senator Sam McMahon for the Country Liberal Party. We also received a statement from the Labor Party this morning, Erin Early, announcing that that Luke Gosling is going to be running, as is Melandiri McCarthy, which I think we already anticipated. But the interesting one is going to be Jacinta Price in the sense that it's certainly going to be a hotly contested race by the sounds of things.
But there's others
in
that race.
There are. Some of the names that have been thrown around are Linda Fazeldine.
And there was someone else, Leah?
Was it your former?
Yes, my former chief of staff, Tim Dixon, has put his hat in the ring. I think Linda Fazeldine, Jacinta Price.
And you would think that Senator McMahon.
And maybe even Tracy Hay might put her hat in the ring.
I don't know. Look, you know, pre-selection's always a really exciting time. It's not something that members of Parliament on
maybe
the CLP side get involved in.
But I better check my sports bet out.
You know, it's great. You know, what we want, and this is a wonderful thing, you know, we want passionate Territorians to come forward and vie for these positions. Like, that's very, very healthy process.
But let's be honest, whoever gets pre-selected for a Senate position will get elected. That's a given. But I want to know if Territory Alliance is going to stand anyone.
Well,
Are they still going? Do they even exist?
Are they registered
anymore? I'm not sure. Have they paid all their bills?
Big questions.
Is it going to be a bit of a dirty fight, though, for the CLP Senate seat?
Oh, look, that's going to, you know, be up to the individuals involved. I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, this happens in every single seat.
Why doesn't Jacinta Price run for the House of Reps like she did before?
Well, that was one of the questions. She had said she felt she would be better placed to run in the Senate.
Liz spilled her water in here.
We might take a very short break.
360's The Week That Was, thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is the week that was, and we've just about run out of time. In the studio with me is Leah Finocchiaro, Kate Warden and Kezia Puric. I can confirm that the water has been cleaned and nothing went on any of the electronics, so it's all good.
I'll be washing my mouth out with soap.
Yes.
You better. Now,
lucky
the Northern Territory, we know that, today, the Northern Territory, we're going to be launching, the AFL's going to be launching a bold bid. To establish an AFL team when the league grants its next licence. The team would be based in Darwin with plans already drawn up for a new stadium to be built in the city's CBD. The NT News has got this on the front page of the paper. Games would also be played in Alice Springs with options for matches in Townsville and Cairns also being considered. AFL-NT chairman Sean Bowden said the bid was about activating and nurturing the talent in the Northern Territory, particularly in remote Indigenous communities and inspiring those players towards an AFL career. Kate Warden, you are the Minister for Sport. It's a very bold bid.
It is very bold, and it's really good to see sports having an aspiration.
Yep.
Also. But what they're talking about today is a feasibility study that we actually funded back in 2018 because we thought, you know, you need a lot of more detail around such big enterprises. And the feasibility study, they actually had it last year, but due to COVID and, you know, for them, a very difficult period as well. They didn't release it. So they're now releasing that. And that says, you know, it does, comes up with quite a number of different options around, you know, a top-end team rather than a Darwin-centric team.
I think a top-end team.
So maybe like Cairns and Townsville, and that included too.
Correct.
And the top of WA.
But we've got to remember the AFL... themselves actually decide on teams. We've got, you know, if they ever decide on a 19th team, then that becomes an option for a bid. And I think there's nothing wrong with a territory getting itself ready in a position when those opportunities arise to have a crack.
Can I ask, and can we afford it?
Because it shows you that it doesn't stack up, Katie.
No, commercially it has to stack up.
But it doesn't. Is that what the feasibility study shows?
It basically says that you need to be, and that's why, you know, you have to think about things that perhaps across the top end rather than just
we don't have the critical mass as a territory.
Well, but, you know, Townsville is a similar size and they've got a team. I think it's really important to dream.
They do in the rugby league.
It's important to dream.
They've got the North Queensland Cowboys, obviously, in the rugby league. And I will say, as a girl who's lived in Townsville for a number of years, it's fantastic having your home team. But the difference is in Townsville is that there is that larger catchment area in the sense that you've got Cairns, you've got other locations in far north. So there is that more critical mass.
We've got Alice Springs.
I'd love to see it happen.
We do. And we've got sensational players which you continually export out to other teams.
Why can't we look north and have some kind of sporting arrangement with Timor-Leste when the borders open?
Look north to the Tiwi Islands.
Do you know what? I'd be more inclined to get a few of those players from North Queensland myself.
And look at us. In 2021, there's four women in this room talking about the borders of AFL. It's how important.
Katie, if you're not happy with Timor-Leste because you think they might not be interested, let's go to Papua New Guinea.
Because they're fantastic at their footy.
They're good rugby union players.
So. Well, they are as well.
But, you know, I was on the Tiwi Islands earlier in the week and went through their Sporting Hall of Fame, and I tell you what, it was pretty exciting.
You know, there are people that, I mean, the current population just doesn't realise, like the Cantillas.
Well, we've been exporting, and I think that's the reason for the feasibility study. We just keep exporting all our great players.
And people forget, I mean, Maurice Rioli was an exceptional footballer, we know that. But his brother, Sebastian, his eldest brother, who's since passed on, was, in my view and my family's view, a more brilliant footballer.
Yeah.
It's just that he got injuries early in his career and we didn't have the medicine and the technology to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah. The likes
Sibby
of Michael McLean.
Yeah. So many.
Andrew McLean. I mean, I remember my Andrew McLean running around as a young kid, bouncing the footy.
Ladies, we've run out of time.
I've got a conspiracy theory, though.
What is it?
Come on. This will be a good end to the morning. Oh. So I reckon that this is Joel Bowden's chief ministership pitch for 2020.
I think you've got your names wrong because Sean Bowden, they're brothers, but that's not the same thing. I've got a better conspiracy theory.
The Northern Territory Labor Government is trying to push Palmerston to take over half of Darwin and half of Litchfield.
Well, we're going to talk to you again about that, Kezia. That is something.
North Crest are happy about it, I have to say.
We've got run out of time. We've got to play the national anthem. I'm very sorry, everyone.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Kezia Purick. Thank you all so much for your time today. You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360.